This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, touchdown, Ian Book! And we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Henry!
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Social distancing continues on Sports Beat. We are broadcasting from our home. Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett with you. We're brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, stay fun. By Rossini's Pizza, carry out, you're proud to bring home, Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. And by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Great to have you with us on this Thursday evening. Well, I thought I was going to be at Four Winds Field getting set for the first South Bend Cubs game. Of course, that has been put on hold right now.
No doubt.
But we'll have a baseball theme today as the guy who could have started opening day on the mound for South Bend, Chicago Cubs prospect Cole Franklin, will join us in just a couple of moments. Bottom of the hour, we'll shift to football. Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune with his IndyInsider.com recruiting update. And then at 6:10 tonight, the president of the Midwest League and South Bend resident Dick Nussbaum will join the program. We'll talk about his thoughts on where baseball stands right now, and I'm hoping to get into a little bit of a conversation about how the major league owners are looking at cutting down on the number of minor league teams, which could affect the Midwest League. So he can't speak for Major League Baseball, but Mr. Nussbaum could obviously offer some perspective on that particular storyline. Sean, how are you?
Absolutely. I'm doing well. Yourself?
Doing okay, thank you. Looking forward to a little baseball conversation today. I was a part of the virtual opening day for the South Bend Cubs, so that was fun. And there were quite a few people checking that out today. So what are those things? The Great American Pastime's on hold, but it is kind of fun to look back at last year's South Bend Cubs playoff run. And I know Major League Baseball, MLB Network, MLB.com, they're showing a lot of old games right now. So we're doing the best
Absolutely.
We can. And we'll see if this whole May, June Major League Baseball start actually has a chance. I don't think either one of us are holding our breath, but it's nice to have the thought that maybe something like that could happen. And then on the other side of the conversation, Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly was on NBC Sports Network today, a little chat with Mike Tirico, and he mentioned the possibility of, hey, we could possibly, if we need to, start the college football season in October. You take out some bye weeks, and you tack the September games on the back end of the schedule, and you could possibly get it done. So we've heard a lot from Brian the last couple of days, and he was on with Tirico today. And, you know, that's not actually something that we'd have to really think about. I mean, there's a chance we might have to worry about something like that. So if you start in October, you can get done hopefully by New Year's Day.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch this, what happens with college football if it does get delayed, Darren, because just like if you use the NCAA tournament and the conference basketball tournaments as an example, remember, the conferences shutting down their tournaments had nothing to do with the NCAA. They were essentially all left to make decisions on their own, and then the NCAA just made the tournament, or, you know, the decision on their own tournament. So I think that, you know, we're going to see a lot of conferences kind of making their own decisions depending on what's going on with this in different parts of the country, you know. So I think that you could see that, you know, eliminate some of the non-conference games and things like that. Where that Notre Dame is affected, obviously, is they're not in a conference. So how does that work for them? You know, but again, I think it's going to be interesting to watch just to see how everybody kind of works this out.
He's Sean Steyers. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. As I mentioned, this would have been opening day for the South Bend Cubs. Of course, all the South Bend Cub games right here on WSBT Radio. And when I was starting to work on my game notes for the season in January, there's a part of the game notes where I list who the starter is that day, and basically those were opening day notes I was working on. So I penciled in our next guest as our opening day starter. I'm not sure what Buddy Bailey and the Cubs organization would have done, but Cole Franklin's going to join us for a couple of moments. A member of the Chicago Cubs organization, MLB Pipeline, has Cole as the number 7 prospect in the entire Chicago Cubs system, and he spent most of last year in Eugene, 10 starts, a 2.31 ERA. He had one start with South Bend and pitched 3 innings for the eventual Midwest League champion South Bend Cubs. And Cole is kind enough to join us for a couple of moments here on WSBT Radio. Cole, it's Darren. Good to talk to you once again. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Thank you so much. Cole, let's start with a professional baseball player like yourself. What are you doing on a daily basis to do the social distancing, but also keep your body and mind ready for a possible start of the baseball season?
Oh, I'm doing a lot of at-home activities pretty much with my little brother. So my little brother's 14 years old, so we go out on the street, play long toss, and the Cubs sent us out like a body weight movement, like type of strength program. And so I've been doing like these programs that they have us on. So it's just a lot of body weight stuff right now.
Cole, you're obviously not starting today, but as Darren said, you know, he had you penciled in potentially as the opening day starter here in South Bend. What would your game day routine look like on a day when you know you are the starting pitcher?
Usually get to the field about 2.5 hours, 3 hours before my start. Just kind of start, you know, kind of getting in that zone. Put my headphones in. I'm not very social on the days I pitch. I kind of stick to myself and kind of get myself ready, get my mind right before I go out there. Usually an hour before I start playing catch, I'll start rolling out, start getting stretched out by the trainer. Then about 30 minutes before I go play catch, I start doing my arm workouts, like, kind of just like pre-activity throwing. And, then go out to the field, do kind of my mobility stretches, and then usually, you know, do bands, and then get to start my throwing program.
Cole Franklin, our guest here on WSBT Radio, and let's just keep the hypothetical going. If you were starting for South Bend today, Cole, are you in Oklahoma right now, by the way?
Yes, I'm in Oklahoma right now.
Well, let me paint a picture for you. We had 72 degrees 2 days ago. We were 67 yesterday. So you probably are like, okay, give me the baseball. Let's go. Well, let me paint the picture right now. There are snow flurries in the air, and it's 41 degrees. How many times have you pitched with snow in the air and the temperature at 41 degrees?
I would say temperature at 41 degrees, maybe 3 or 4 times, but snow flurries, none. Never.
Does that sound enticing at all to pitch while the snow is falling?
Absolutely not. That sounds horrible.
Well, I'll tell you what. In 2015, the first ever South Bend Cub game when South Bend became affiliated with the Cubs, it was 72 degrees since. I think we've had 40, 35, 38, and we were snowed out, I think, 2 years ago, and last year it was 40 degrees and snow was in the air. So I guess it's just kind of something you got to deal with. So you guys in Oklahoma are awfully lucky.
Oh, I know. Right now, it's perfect. Looking out the window, it's about 75 degrees, a little sunny.
I think we'd take that for sure. But like Darren said, we had two really nice days the last couple days.
No question.
Hey, Cole, it sounded like when you were talking about your long toss and stuff a minute ago, you mentioned are you getting workouts from the team, you know, someone in the organization? What kind of communications are you having, you know, with people in the organization and that kind of stuff right now?
Yeah, so our strength coordinators will send us out like a plan for us, like a strength program like designed for us. And it's kind of destined on if you can find a gym to work out at right now, or if you can't, they send us a body weight workout that we are able to do at home. And so everything's kind of designed around you, but we talk to our strength coaches about once or twice every week, our trainers about once or twice every week, kind of just checking up how we're doing, how are things going, make sure we're staying on track.
Cole Franklin is our guest. Sixth round pick of the Chicago Cubs in 2018, pitched mainly for Eugene last year, one start with the South Bend Cubs. Two-part question, Cole. First off, how far along in spring training were you when everything was shut down? Second part of the question is, how much time do you think pitchers, including yourself, would need to get ready to restart a season?
So during spring training, I was about to start my three-inning live bullpens. So I already threw a two-inning live bullpen, and I was kind of getting geared up to, like, keep building innings, you know, before we start playing our games. And so I was already throwing to hitters at the time. And honestly, I think for pitchers, I think, honestly, if you give us, like, I would say legitimately a month and a half, I think we could be ready. Because I feel like everyone's still doing their thing, like, the stuff they're supposed to be, because we have, like, a schedule that they send us out. So I would say about a month and a half, and then I think we could be back on track.
Now, are you saying a month after you report and everyone's back together then and that whole thing?
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's what I believe.
Okay. Cole, you made 10 starts in Eugene last year. What was kind of your focus at short season last year?
Honestly, I was trying to go out there and just provide the best option for my team. Like, as in, I was trying to just hold runners, I was just trying to go out there and compete for my team to get a win. I really focused on just pitching to contact. I really try to just give my team work because I know, we have some of the best players out there. So I really just try to pitch to contact and just keep us in the ball game.
Cole, take us back to when you were drafted by the Chicago Cubs. You had planned to go to the University of Oklahoma to pitch for the Sooners. You're taken in the sixth round. Was it a difficult decision to bypass Norman, Oklahoma for professional baseball?
It was. It was just because of the fact that I knew I had a home in Oklahoma, and I knew all the coaches so well. But then again, I kind of looked at it, and I was like, man, I mean, the Chicago Cubs is such a historical team. Like, it's a dream. And I was like, I can't let the chance of this dream slipping away. And so I it was hard, but I knew what I wanted for sure.
So being in Oklahoma, did you grow up an Oklahoma fan? Were you an Oklahoma State fan? How'd that go?
Yeah, I was a big Oklahoma fan. It was straight crimson and cream at my house.
Well, I'm thinking, Cole, since you're from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, you would become the second, at least, person I know to pitch for South Bend from that town. The other is Archie Bradley, who actually had a bobblehead years ago for the South Bend Silverhawks, of course now a pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Do you have any type of relationship with Archie?
Yeah, Archie's like my older brother, pretty much. So, during the offseason, I go hunting with Archie. So my dad, who's an agent, is also Archie's agent. And so we're always really close together. I go hang out with Archie when I'm in Arizona all the time at his house. And so he'll have cookouts, invite me over. So he's pretty much like my older brother.
Wow.
So you said your dad is an agent. Does that mean he's not your agent? And, kind of how did that whole thing play out?
No, he's my agent as well.
Okay.
Does he get a discount?
Not really. He treats me just like another one of his players, honestly.
Gotcha.
Obviously, he's going to have advice for you that's not like maybe what the typical dad would have, because he's so well versed. And you were talking about your decision about college and things like that. So, what kind of advice were you getting on him? How much did you lean on him for not just that decision, but just everything that's kind of led you up to this point so far?
Absolutely. Well, I felt like I was always raised in a baseball family. My uncle played 13 years, and my dad played 10 years. And so I would say he helped me. He pretty much kept me ahead of my level pretty easily, just because of the fact that I felt like I was always above, mechanically, and just like more fundamentally sound than some of the kids I was playing with, because I always had that instruction, you know, at my house. But I think when it came to the decision to getting drafted, he kind of left that up to me. He said, "Hey, it's your career. Like, you're gonna do what you make out of it." So he pretty much just left that up to me.
Cole Franklin is our guest, Chicago Cubs prospect, and a guy that could have been a part of the South Bend Cubs and still could be later on this year. We'll have to see. So let me ask you about Uncle Ryan. Baseball fans probably recognize Ryan Franklin, the former pitcher for the Mariners, the Phillies, the Reds, and ended up his career with the Cardinals. He was their closer at the end of his career as he piled up 84 saves over the last, I think, 5 years of his Major League Baseball career. So maybe expand on how much Ryan has impacted the way you pitch today. And is it almost as much learning the mental side as also the technique?
He's helped me a lot. I would say my dad's helped me a little bit more, just because of the fact that, you know, I'm always with my dad growing
sure.
up. But I would say he's helped me with the kind of the daily struggles, like when like you're kind of getting the back end of like a minor league season, and he's kind of helped me like mentally with that. So, but I would say they really kind of formed me like to be ready for the challenges I'm going to face going through the system. And so I would say they both kind of had ties mentally to preparing me for the challenges I'll face. So I'm really thankful for that, for like having that, that accessibility so close to me.
Cole, again, with today, it should have been opening day, and everyone's been without baseball now for a long time. It's been a month now since spring training was shut down. What's it been like not to have baseball for this extended period of time?
Honestly, it's been horrible. I hate it. I didn't realize how big baseball affected my life until this. And I feel like I don't know what to do. I wake up and I'm like kind of just at a loss. Like I feel like I should. I'm like, because right now especially we'd be working out every day, going to the field, and just kind of having that like come to a stop. It was just like eye opening to realize how much baseball has influenced my life, like every day. And so it's terrible. I hate it.
And Cole, just
I
in terms
not being able to play right now.
Oh, I can imagine. We're hurting right now not being able to broadcast or watch the great game of baseball. And just in your time with the Cubs organization, are there a couple of guys that are also prospects in the Cubs system that you become really good friends with, or you guys sit around and maybe talk every once in a while when things get tough, or maybe times are going really, really good?
Yeah, so me, Brendan Davis, Cole Roeder, Ryan Jensen, Cam Sanders, DJ Artist, we all live together in spring training. We were going to live together in spring training this year, and so those dudes are my really close friends. Me, Cole, and Brennan are, I would say, the closest, just because of the fact that, like, our draft class, we were the only high school kids that that were drafted that year, and so we kind of stuck together. And we would always hang out together away from the field. And so I think our bond, my bond with those guys would probably be the strongest.
Cole, my last question for you, just plain and simple, what would it mean for you for baseball to get started up this season?
It would mean the world to me. I mean, it's literally my whole world. I feel so lost without it. It would literally mean everything to me. Mm-hmm.
Well, Cole, hopefully we get you in South Bend, or from your standpoint, maybe you go to Myrtle Beach. We'll have to see how things play out, but we're really looking forward to having baseball back here in South Bend. And I know you can't wait to get back on the mound, so hopefully soon it will happen, and we greatly appreciate your time offering your insight as you sit and wait for baseball to get started. And, of course, today would have been opening day in the minors. So, Cole, stay safe, stay healthy, and we look forward to seeing you hopefully in a month or so.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
You bet. Thank you. Cole Franklin, member of the Chicago Cubs organization, and a guy to watch in the Cubs system from a pitching standpoint. Sixth-round pick of the Chicago Cubs in 2018 out of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. And again, hopefully we'll have South Bend Cubs baseball very soon, and every South Bend Cub game will be right here on 96.1 WSBT the sports leader. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. More baseball talk coming up at 6:10. The president of the Midwest League, Dick Nussbaum, will join us here on WSBT Radio. But coming up next, we'll talk Notre Dame football recruiting with the South Bend Tribune's Carter Carls. Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and live on the SportsBeat app. And that sound means it is Thursday at 5:30, and that means it is time to talk Fighting Irish football recruiting with Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune, the Indy Insider for Fighting Irish football recruiting. Well, Carter, always great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just getting through my Netflix shows and eating all my food. Can't complain.
Are you into that Tiger show that everybody's talking about?
You mean Tiger King?
Yes.
Some respect on its name. It is very good.
Is it?
It actually happened. It took place about 2 hours away from where I grew up. It makes a lot of sense when you get to know me. You think, okay, you know me, you know Tiger King. It all kind of makes sense. Some of my peculiarity, I guess.
Well,
but
I have not watched.
Show. I love it.
Well, I have not watched that show, but I just completed the 10-episode series, The Morning Show, on Apple TV, and it was unbelievable. There's some really touchy storylines that need to be discussed, but it is a fascinating show. So I don't know if you've had a chance to see that, but Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, Steve Carell, it's a very intense show, to say the least.
So, man, I gotta check it out. That's a loaded cast.
Oh, it's terrific. It is a really, really good cast. All right, let's get to some football conversation. I'm just going to ask this generally speaking to start off. You know, Brian Kelly, the head coach of the Irish, was on SportsBeat a week ago, and then he had the Zoom conference yesterday. And both times he was discussing how he spends a lot of his time FaceTiming players and parents on the phone with those individuals. Do you get a sense at all, Carter, and how impactful that has been on the players? Is there much conversation when you talk to players or following them on Twitter that even though they can't come to campus and they can't have face-to-face, is that type of conversation extremely helpful to the players and parents right now?
It is. I have been really impressed with Notre Dame's approach these last few weeks. I mean, you're hearing other coaches in other places say some pretty crazy things. You know, Eric Hansen mentioned this in a story yesterday, how just refreshing it was to hear Brian Kelly talk about their approach. So I think the most honorable thing you can do is admit that you don't really know what you're talking about. You don't know what's going on. You don't have all the answers. I think that's the key here is there's a lot of unknowns, and to act like you have the answer is probably the wrong thing to do. The right thing that they're doing is taking a practical approach. Okay, well, let's just try to train the best way we can, the safest way we can. And that's what they've done. They have sent resistance bands to every player on the team so that people who do not have the right equipment to work with, they can work out. They can do things. They're having Zoom meetings. They're having quizzes for the players to take. And then they're communicating in a way that holds each other accountable. They have SWAT team leaders that hold their players accountable, the teammates accountable. And these Zoom meetings, it's not just from a football perspective. There's an academic side to it. There's all these players are having to take their courses online. I think they've managed it just about the best way they can. And from a recruiting perspective, you're beginning to see how that's affecting things. They've really had some movement these last few days, this last week. We've seen the Zoom meetings. We've seen them and FaceTime and recruits a lot. But now they've got sort of something that they're working toward. They're planning tentatively two recruiting weekends in June.
They have a virtual recruiting online thing you can do where you can kind of visit the campus and all these Zoom meetings. It's a way that these recruits can kind of have an online experience as if they're visiting Notre Dame. And the players are very involved, too, with reaching out to these recruits. I would say more than ever, Notre Dame's players are reaching out to recruits Notre Dame's pursuing. And I think, again, that's very pivotal because you talk to a lot of these recruits, and the main thing that they want is they want to feel like they fit in. They want to feel like it's their home away from home. And when you have that continuity with talking to players and you feel like you're one of them, that's really attracting to you. So I think it's really good that Notre Dame's doing that.
Carter, you mentioned those two recruiting weekends that are coming up in June. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns at this point. You know, you talk with recruits, and some of them are uneasy. They think, well, man, we got to take a plane. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. Notre Dame's message has been pretty clear. Hey, if this is safe, if this is great, if this all works out, we will do it. But if it's not, we will let you know, and we will shut it down as soon as possible. You know, and so I think they have an understanding that, and they've made it pretty clear to recruits that this obviously can't happen, but it's better to plan for it to happen in case, like, by June, you know, it's safe to have something like that. And I'm sure they'd also have precautions, you know, with social distancing, probably not going to be a lot of handshaking and things of that nature on these visits. And I think the important thing, June 12th, through the 14th, that's the big weekend to watch. You know, we talked a lot of segments about how the March 20th weekend was going to be, you know, maybe the biggest off-season recruiting weekend in the Kelly era. Well, there's ways to make that weekend into that June 12th weekend, kind of replacing it. And the key distinction between the two is that for June, you can take official visits, you know, visits that the university pays for. March, you can't do that. And so not only are they getting some of those players that would have visited in March, not only are they getting them to visit for that June visit, but they're also getting players that come from far away, you know, Texas and Florida and California, because they're able to take an official visit. So I expect this to be a really big recruiting weekend. You know, I could see Notre Dame getting three to five commitments all in one weekend. And it really punked it out. But again, it just may never happen, so we'll see.
Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune is our guest. And, Carter, your signal's fading out every few seconds, so I don't know if you can move 3 feet to the left or right. That might make a difference right now. So,
oh, no.
Just want to point it out to you. Let's move along to a couple of recruits that, in your opinion, Notre Dame fans should follow pretty closely at this point.
Well, I talked with Pat Colvin, an offensive lineman out of Chicago, after he got his Notre Dame offer, and he admits that he's a big Notre Dame fan. He's a lifelong Notre Dame fan. I think for him, he's already been to campus, but he really wants to go one more time and meet with the commits, meet with the players, get to know the coaches a little bit better, and then he'll be ready to commit. Another guy, Justin Aker, is a defensive end out of Rhode Island, Jason Ranier. I mean, it would be a shocker to me if he does not commit on his next visit to Notre Dame. Whether that's in June or later, we'll see, but I think he's ready. Ryan Barnes, a cornerback out of Maryland, he's one I talked to a week ago. He also deals with Notre Dame. Sometimes, you know, a lot of the recruits will try to kind of hide where they're leaning or try to, you know, not tell you who they were a fan of growing up, if that's a school they're considering. But when you have guys that say, yeah, they're a Notre Dame fan, typically you'd really have to screw it up to not land those guys. So those are three recruits I really like landing at Notre Dame. I've also mentioned Rocco Spindler. I think he likes Notre Dame a lot. And then Will Shipley, he's kind of down between Notre Dame and Clemson for him, so I think he'll be worth watching. He's the biggest priority for Notre Dame right now.
Maybe we should try to reconnect with Carter, give it a shot, because he's really fading right now. So Carter,
I was
going
to say, I think we need
you
to stand on one leg, raise one hand in the air.
Yeah, you're really fading. It's really hard to hear you. So let's have Jerry call you right back, and we'll see if we can get a better signal. All right, so we'll count 1,001, 1,002, and yeah, then we'll get back to Carter. Normally we call Carter when he's in the office on a landline, but obviously no one's going to work right now, and we're trying to get to him on his cell phone. So we apologize, but we're at the mercy of technology right now. So
we all are.
Yeah,
that's
no
for
question.
Sure.
Carter Carls joins us here from the South Bend Tribune, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. We should get him hooked back up here in just one moment. And we have coming up in about 20 minutes or so, Dick Nussbaum, the president of the Midwest League. We'll talk some baseball with Dick as, again, this would be opening day for the South Bend Cubs today. But, of course, that's not the case. Later on, CBSSports.com did a piece on ranking the top 10 rebuilding jobs right now in Major League Baseball, and three teams from the AL Central made the top 10. So we'll get to that coming up here in just a second on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And do we have Carter back ready to go? That might be a bad sign. We may not be able to get him back at this point because I don't know where he's at, but he is definitely in a cave. Why don't we take a quick timeout? Jerry, let's go to break for a second. We'll see if we can reestablish. No, do we have him now? Okay.
Yep. Can you
let's
hear me, guys?
Let's give it a shot then.
Hey!
Go ahead, Sean. Take it away.
Carter, I was starting to worry that you were hanging out with Saul Goodman, and better call Saul out in the desert there somewhere and lost your cell phone reception. But I'm glad we've got you back. You were. Go ahead.
I'm sorry that it sounded like that. I apologize. I think there's a spotty service at some point at certain spots in my house, so I'm glad you guys were able to detect that. And I'm in a new location now, so hopefully I sound good and clear.
A lot better.
All right, sounding a lot better right now. And I know it, right there toward the end when you were starting to really cut out, you were mentioning Will Shipley, and he's kind of the top priority in the 2021 class. So where do you think he is right now in the recruiting process?
Will Shipley is very back and forth every day. I think one day he loves Clemson. Another day he loves Notre Dame. Another day he might even be thinking about NC State, the school both of his parents attended. But the big thing that he's uncertain about is just the timing of his commitment. He had it all mapped out. He was going to visit five of his top schools, Notre Dame included, and he was never able to visit Notre Dame that second time. He's only been to Notre Dame one time, which is for the USC game. So not all of his questions are really answered. He hasn't really hung out with the players. He hasn't gotten to feel that camaraderie and just that atmosphere in the Notre Dame locker room. And so that's something that he's missing, and he feels like committing before doing that is kind of cutting his recruitment short. But all along, he had planned to commit in April, so he's kind of back and forth about this. This is an everyday dilemma for him. How Notre Dame is approaching this and how they see it is it benefits them to visit him again. If they get visited again, that probably means that Notre Dame will land him. But if he cuts his recruitment short, then I would expect Clemson to land him. And Notre Dame is really pulling out all the stops here. They've had about a dozen players reach out to him multiple times, calling him, telling him about Notre Dame, recruiting him hard. They've got their personal presentation with him. Multiple coaches are calling him and texting him on a weekly basis multiple times. Just about everything you could possibly do for a recruit Notre Dame is doing. And so if Notre Dame ends up losing Will Shipley, it's not for a lack of effort, that's for sure.
Carter, let's talk about one of the new defensive coaches in the secondary, Mike Mickens. Your impressions of him, and are there a couple of big recruits that Mickens is chasing right now?
Yeah, I really like what Mike Mickens is doing right now. Just talking with a lot of different cornerbacks in this 2021 class, they really like his passion, his energy. I talked with Ryan Barnes, the guy I mentioned earlier in the segment, and he was really saying, like,
Mike Miggins was teaching me things that no other coach really has done. And this is someone who hardly looked at my film at all, and he's already giving me really in-depth pointers. So this is someone who really understands the game of football and is really good at communicating and being passionate about his work. The problem with Mike Miggins, or for Mike Miggins, I should say, is he wasn't given, you know, a full cup board. He you know, there's some problems at the quarterback position. There's been weeks on the recruiting trail in the past. And so this is not a recruiting class where you're just going to see two or three, four or five star signees at the cornerback position. It's going to take some time. But I think with his work ethic, his understanding of the game, and just how people are really receiving him well, I think it's only a matter of time where you're going to see it pay dividends.
How about the new tight ends coach, John McNulty? Any early impressions on him?
Yeah, it's still a lot to kind of see there. He's really going after a few guys. I just actually talked with Ken Barong earlier today, the tight end committed to Notre Dame, and he was a little uneasy after Chip Long, former offensive coordinator, was fired, kind of parted ways with Notre Dame, if we want to call it that. And Kane, you know, as soon as John McNulty was officially hired last month, reached out to Kane and really reassured him that, hey, we really want you here. But Notre Dame wants to get two tight ends this class. So they're going after a couple. There's one in California named Brock Bowers. He's already named Notre Dame as a top eight school. And then there's one in Iowa, Thomas Fedone, and he's named Notre Dame as a top six school of his. So off the bat, you know, McNulty has done a nice job with a couple of the top tight ends in the class. I don't think Notre Dame's ever going to have an issue recruiting tight ends, you know, with the whole tight end U history and all that. I don't think that will be the problem. I think what Notre Dame should be concerned about is, you know, as a full picture offensive recruiting, because Chip Long was one of the best recruiters, if not the best recruiter on Notre Dame's coaching staff. He's a big loss in that regard, and especially on offense. You know, when Autry Denson, Del Alexander weren't picking up the slack from their end with recruiting, Chip Long was getting in there and doing a great job. He played a big role in getting Chris Tyree last class, Jordan Johnson, Michael Mayer. A lot of the big offensive players that Notre Dame's gotten over the past few years, Chip Long has played a big role. And so John McNulty, I think he's really going to stick more to tight end recruiting, and it will really be on Tommy Rees and the rest of the offensive staff to really pull up their end of the bargain as far as recruiting all around at their positions.
Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune talking Notre Dame football recruiting. You published a linebacker recruiting story today. What did you learn?
Yeah, if there was one position group that seems pretty behind in this class, it is linebacker recruiting. There is, you know, you look at every other position, and Notre Dame either has a commitment or has gotten, you know, a visit from their top targets. But at linebacker recruiting, they've offered seven guys. Only one has visited Notre Dame. Yanni Karlaftis out of West Lafayette. And he's not really all that interested. Notre Dame's not really all that interested. There just hasn't been a ton of mutual interest between the linebackers Notre Dame's been pursuing in this class. Some of that is by design. They haven't prioritized it a whole ton. They took a total of seven linebackers in the 2018 and 2019 classes. They've got 11 on scholarship now. So for space reasons, you only need a couple in this cycle, but the key thing is they didn't take a single linebacker last class. So I think, for my personal opinion, they really need to take at least two this cycle. And where they're at right now, it's not, you know, overly encouraging. But I think they've got a chance at a guy named Donovan McMillan. He's a rover. He could be a safety. He's out of Pittsburgh area in Pennsylvania, but I really like the kid. He's a three-star recruit, but I think he could potentially end up being a four-star when it's all said and done. But Yeah, Notre Dame's got a lot of work to do at linebacker recruiting. I talked with pretty much everyone that they're interested in at that position, and so got a lot of key updates for that position group if you want to check that out at IndyInsider.com.
All right, Carter, tell us what else you might be working on for upcoming installments of the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com.
Yeah, I will have an update kind of on tight end recruiting after talking with Kane Barone today and who they're kind of going after, what they're planning on, and that should be in this weekend.
Very good. He is Carter Carls. He joins us every Thursday to talk Fighting Irish football recruiting. Recruiting never sleeps. And Carter keeps us awake with all of his great insight on this subject. Thank you, Carter,
if I have
as always.
The cell service.
Well, that's okay. Baby steps, baby steps. Call your Tiger guy. Maybe he can help you out.
For real, for real. All right, thank you, guys.
All right, take care. That's Carter Carls from the South Bend Tribune. It is 5:50. Sean and Darren with you. My five question of the day is all about baseball, and that is going to come your way next from 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
This would have been opening day for minor league baseball, opening day for the South Bend Cubs, so we'll keep the baseball thoughts alive by this My Five Question of the Day. The top five things that Sean misses about the game of baseball. We go 5-1 and begin with answer number five.
My number five is the smells of the ballpark, because as soon as you walk in a ballpark, you know where you are by the smell, whether it's hot dogs, burgers, brats on the grill, those big soft pretzels, stale beer on the floor, and the fresh grass, and all different kinds of smells just wafting through the air at the ballpark.
Boy, that's a good answer right there. I could really use one of those hot dogs and a brew. I think that sounds pretty doggone good right now.
It does.
Okay, number four.
The sounds of the ballpark, whether it's the crack or the ping of the bat, depending on what kind of game you're at, or, you know, the vendors going up and down the aisles, the PA announcers, the walk-up music, organ music if you're lucky, the sound of cleats coming in and out of the dugout, and the, you know, the ball hitting the catcher's mitt, and just the whole thing, the crowd cheering and booing, all of the sounds of the park as well.
We're going through the top five things that Sean misses about baseball so far. It's been smells and sounds. Let's see how many other senses he gets to. Let's go to number three.
Well, you said you could use a dog and a beer, and that's what I've got. Dog and a beer, the family at the park. And, you know, our family has kind of been a baseball family since our kids were young and even before that. But, I mean, we've always kind of usually planned at least one trip in the summer to a ballpark. Our kids are Cubs fans, so we go to Wrigley a lot. And, I mean, we've been all over the Midwest, and they get their treats. But just like James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams when they went to Fenway, what do you want? Dog and a beer. That's what mom and dad get.
So you're a Royals fan. Your wife is a...
Right. She's for the most part neutral, but I think if she had to, she'd say the Royals as well.
So you allowed the kids to be Cub fans then. That was okay in your household.
Yeah.
They didn't jump on the Royal bandwagon.
They grew up here, so... Yeah, that's right. There wasn't a bandwagon to jump on back then, even though my son's first ballpark was Kauffman Stadium back in the day.
Well, yep. My son grew up here. I did not, and he has not turned to the dark side yet. So
he had that Cardinal dad in the house, so that would have been a lot harder for him, I think.
I never pushed it, but he jumped on the bandwagon. Well, I mean, they won two World Series by the time he was 6 years old, so that probably makes it a little easier
there you go.
In your choice. Okay,
there you go.
Top five things you miss about baseball, number two.
Number two is just the idea that anything can happen on any given pitch. You know, the pitcher throws the ball, as soon as it leaves his hands, the things that can happen are endless. Whether it's, you know, there's a runner on, if there's a runner on base, it's even better. They're going to start the runner. Is he going to steal? Are they going to throw over? Where's the batter going to hit it? And then just the multiple guys in play when there is a runner on base. In late innings, it's all magnified. It's just fabulous.
The drama, late innings of a postseason game, hard to top.
Yep.
Okay, so
nothing
we're better. Up to number one, the thing more than anything else you miss since we don't have baseball right now?
Number one is games on the radio and TV, but of course mostly radio because, I mean, baseball was just made for radio. And being able to get in the car, drive around, tune in, Pat Hughes or Darren Pritchett when I'm driving home from the station, listening to the game, the pictures being painted, the whole thing, and this time of year. You know, most of my baseball viewing, it would have been on TV, you know, kind of wait till it gets warmer to go to the park, not like you being at all those games and everything, but just to be able to check it out for a while, take a nap, whatever. That is number one on my list.
Yeah, hockey is difficult on the radio, and I admit that as someone that broadcasts, you try to keep it simplified and paint a picture, but it's just hard. But baseball is perfect because you get the storytelling, and then when there is action, you can deliver that pretty smoothly. I agree with you.
Yep.
Baseball
Different
is
pace.
Beautiful on the radio. Okay, that's the My 5. It is 557 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the SportsBeat app. .559 and 96.1 WSBT. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett broadcasting from our homes on this Thursday evening. We have one more interview to get to in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk to the president of the Midwest League, our good friend Dick Nussbaum. We'll talk about the state of baseball right now, what he's thinking as a leader of the Midwest League, and what could be ahead for baseball fans. So we'll get into those conversations coming up in just a little bit. We have rapid fire on the way in a little bit, so plenty more to get to. Hope you've enjoyed. We had Cole Franklin on the program, Chicago Cubs pitching prospect, and Carter Carls talking Fighting Irish football recruiting. But we'll get to Mr. Nussbaum in just a couple of moments. But first, how about an update from CBS Sports? We have reached the top of the hour. It is 6 o'clock at 96.1 WSBT South Bend and live on the SportsBeat app.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday SportsBeat.
Touchdown Notre Dame! 70 yards, Bork to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cub Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with a De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Steyers.
Sports Beat continues on WSBT Radio. It is 7 minutes after the top of the hour. We continue on with Sports Beat from home. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you, Jerry Janowski producing in our WSBT studios. We thank you for joining us. Our program brought to you by Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Rossini's Pizza. We have rapid fire coming up in just a little bit. Next, we'll talk to Dick Nussbaum, the president of the Midwest League. And right now, with no TV on sports, I know today would have been the opening round of the Masters at Augusta National, so ESPN is now showing old Masters tournaments, and right now I'm watching the 2012 Masters when Bubba Watson, down the stretch, played some great golf and won the green jacket. Had some pretty good pursuers, Matt Kuchar and Phil Mickelson, but Bubba Watson won the green jacket that year, so that's what we're left with. If you're a golf fan, Augusta is the ultimate golf tournament to watch. Everything's just so perfect, so beautiful. So it's not like we're watching it live, but at the same time, I guess it's as good as we can do right now. A little taste of good old Augusta National down in Georgia.
Yeah, I saw someone tweeted a picture the other day, since they're moving it to November, someone tweeted a picture of what Augusta looked like last November, and there's a lot of fall foliage, and it basically looks like mid-October here in South Bend, you know, just a really beautiful backdrop with the leaves turning and stuff like that, so that'll be a different look once they get to play that in November.
Well, someone wrote that leaves could be a problem. Knowing Augusta National, they will have...
I think they'll have that taken care of.
They'll get the leaves off the golf course. I mean, you don't see any wrappers. You don't see any trash. Now, all the wrappers and cups are green, so if something is on the ground, it blends in with the grass there. But I have a feeling leaves are not going to be a problem. They'll hire 500 people to make sure that golf course looks as good as it possibly can. But yeah, it's going to be very odd, but it's going to be exciting in November. And I know Jim Nance of CBS was asked, well, you're doing NFL at that time. What are you going to do? He goes, there's no choice. It's easy. I'm going to Augusta National to broadcast the Masters. There's only one Masters every year. There's plenty of National Football League games. So if all goes as planned, again, August, September, October, November, we are going to have almost a half a calendar full of activity in that amount of time. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. My great pleasure to welcome back to the program South Bend resident and president of the Midwest League, Dick Nussbaum. I was really hoping I would see Dick today and we'd be in the broadcast booth at Four Winds Field talking baseball, but the next best thing is on the phone. And Dick, it's Darren. Great to have the chance to catch up with you. How are you today?
You know, I'm doing great, Darren. I'm looking out the window here at a beautiful sunshiny day, and we've had a lot worse opening days, and I wish we were at the ballpark.
No question, Dick. I'm with you there. I guess as president of the Midwest League, Dick, put it into perspective. What is your role? What is your leadership right now for the 16 teams and 16 front offices?
Wow, that's a big question.
Sorry.
It's okay. This is unprecedented times, so my role is I don't want to say I'm making it up as I go along, but I think in any situation where you're in a leadership position, one of your primary jobs is to make sure that your 16 clubs have the most accurate and current information, which requires a lot of communication, a lot of discussions, a lot of emails. And so I'm trying to get the best information I can from those that have the information and passing them along to our clubs, and at the same time getting information for our clubs from our clubs and getting it back to the powers that be, so to speak, so that our interests are considered, and as we navigate our way through a number of very, very important issues that it turns out well for the Midwest League.
Well, so Dick, what does that communication kind of look like? Who do you receive direction and guidance from? And maybe an example of some of that you have to disseminate.
Sure. And this is Thursday, right? I'm sandwiched in between two very important conference calls that I had yesterday. I had with the Council of League Presidents, which is a body of all of the various minor leagues, the three at the low A level, three at the high A level, three at the double A level, two at the triple A level. So there's a number of people on the phone, and we share information, we talk over issues. On that call are representatives from the minor league baseball office in St. Petersburg. And what do we talk about? Well, we talk about, the coronavirus issues, scheduling. We talk about the current status of the professional baseball agreement negotiations with Major League Baseball. We talk about the current legislation, in Washington that are designed to help small businesses. And frankly, our 16 clubs in the Midwest League are all small businesses that are trying to get some help in this time when really they're not operating today, so there's issues, and they're they're trying to get help so they can keep people on the payroll and keep their businesses alive. So that was yesterday. Well, tomorrow I'm going to have a conference call with our 16 clubs, and we're going to and I do a Zoom call if I was a Zoomer, but I haven't graduated to that level yet. So So we're still doing the conference call route, and we're going to talk about all those issues, and you know, gather information, and share information. I think we heard this from another president. I'm trying to be a cheerleader too to keep the spirits up on everybody, and just you know, preparing as best we can for the 2020 season.
Dick Nussbaum, the president of the Midwest League, our guest on WSBT Radio. I hate getting into hypotheticals, but let me just ask it in this fashion. If there is Major League Baseball this year, at whatever point, if it's May, if it's July 1st, whatever the case may be, would it be your anticipation that if there is Major League Baseball, there will be Minor League Baseball?
Yes.
Without a doubt.
How's that for an answer? Yes.
I like that. Short and sweet. And can you anticipate at all? The first domino is Major League Baseball getting the go-ahead from the federal agencies that it is safe to play. Once they get that get-go, how quickly does the dominoes fall, in your opinion, to Minor League Baseball getting going?
Wow. I simply don't know. And here's the reason why. The minor league players have kind of dispersed to the various parts of the country, you know. And Darren, it's almost like when the Notre Dame goes to a bowl game and the players leave mm-hmm. after they take their finals and they go all over the place, and then they've got to reconvene at some hopefully warm January 1st site. And as you know, it always happens. There's one or two people that get either lost on the way or can't get there or whatever. So you can imagine 160 teams, 25 players to a team. There's a lot of players out there. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of planning put in place. You know, what are the flight schedules going to be like at that time? I think it would be I don't think it would be the same day the majors would start, but I think it would be shortly thereafter. That's my own personal opinion.
Okay.
Dick, you talked about the financial concern for members of your league. Do you have any concern that if you're not able to play this year, there might be, you know, some teams that might not be there next year?
You're the third person that's asked me that question today.
wow.
And this is the answer I've given. Our league is very strong. We've got some, and you know, Sean, you've been around, and Darren, of course, has visited all of our sites. We've got some really strong programs in our league. So my anticipation, this is more than a guess, I think it's an educated guess, we're going to be okay. We hope that we're going to get games in this year. We just don't know at this point. But worst case scenario, if we did not get any games in this year, I think that we would have 16 teams next year. So that's the best I can say at this point. That's not to say that there's some real challenges. Most of our clubs are trying to keep people employed and get ready, and part of that's because there's a lot of interest in our clubs, and part of that's because we've got really good operators out there that know how to stretch a dollar as long as it can be stretched.
Yeah. Dick Nussbaum, the president of the Midwest League, our guest here on WSBT Radio. Just going a little different direction for a second, Dick, if you don't mind.
Sure, no problem.
Could you offer a little insight to the average fan, a story that has popped up, and there are articles being written that teams like Clinton, Beloit, Burlington could go away. There could be retraction of minor league teams. And I don't want you to speak for Major League Baseball because they have their reasons for throwing around these ideas, but these minor league teams, Dick, are such a big part of each community, and it's just really hard to imagine that the game of baseball, as strong as it is financially, and I know it's a little different right now going through this virus, but Major League Baseball teams are doing okay, and I'm just shocked to see that there could be a retraction of the number of players they have in the minors, and teams are going away. What is your reaction to that possibility, and do you think it is a distinct possibility?
Well, I don't want to get into any specific teams, but I think there's clearly going to be contraction. I think there'll be less teams. in the next professional baseball agreement. And I think part of that is because the major league clubs and their player development systems don't believe they need as many players in the minor leagues. And the original proposal that was thrown out there, it's gotten a lot of attention, would basically 30 major league teams, four minor league teams per organization, that's 120 teams. And that was the original proposal that was thrown out there. There's 160 right now. And actually there was some talk of some independent teams becoming affiliated with Major League. There was two that were mentioned. So that put at risk 42 minor league teams. There have been a lot of discussions that have been going on, obviously, with what's happened with this pandemic. Some of those discussions have been sidetracked, and rightfully so. My sense at this point is that there's going to be contraction. I don't think it's going to be 42 teams, but there's going to be contraction. Why? I hate to have to defend a decision that I don't particularly agree with, because I think, as you mentioned, minor league baseball is very strong right now. Major league baseball's attendance is decreasing. Minor league baseball's attendance is increasing. Major league baseball has made a point of trying to cultivate the game. I don't know a better way of cultivating the game than having minor league baseball in small communities. You know, it's kind of in our DNA. So the Midwest League is kind of a cross-section of that, where there's some smaller communities, community-owned teams, and then you have teams that are in larger communities that are really dynamos in terms of fan participation. Obviously, South Bend is one of those. You know, the Dayton Dragons have the most consecutive sellout streak in the history of professional sports of all types. Mm-hmm. I think it's at 1380-something straight games. Those are all potential, 40 million minor league fans that attend each year are all potential major league fans, and generally do become major league fans. I had a study done this year, and I'm going to turn the tables a little bit here, because the major leagues tell us that, of all the numbers of minor league players that get signed into play, so few make it. So I wanted to know how many Midwest League players, prior Midwest League players, mm-hmm. who were on the rosters in Major League Baseball in 2019. Do you guys have an idea how many there were?
Oh, my goodness.
I have no guess.
Can you give it a ballpark? What do you think?
Oh, boy. What do you think, Sean?
I'm trying to go, like, is this number too high? Is this too low? I'll start at 1,000. I'll start at 1,000. I don't know.
you're too high there, but
too high.
634.
There's 500 was my next guess. So,
well, that you're a lot smarter than a lot of people. I've had people say 10. 25. that's a lot of players. Okay, when you figure 40 man rosters. And again, during the course of the year, there's more than 40 that cycle through, but let's just use the 40-man rosters, 30 teams. That's 1,200, at any one time that are on a roster. And more than half of that number having played at the Midwest League level. And we're the little A, okay? So there are a lot of players that gain some of their most important experiences at our level, not only because it's good baseball, but playing in front of the crowds that we play, playing on the quality of fields that we have, getting used to being away from home and interacting with communities and learning how to be good citizens and sign autographs and interact with fans. Why Major League Baseball would want to diminish that is in my view, not the wise way to go, but look, that's something they're looking at, and they have concerns about facilities, and Sean and Darren, you'll you could point out some, there's some facilities in our league that need some work.
No question about that.
And that's our deal. We need to make sure that our facilities are better. But you aren't going to find a lot of better facilities than what you find in South Bend, Indiana. So I think we've done pretty well in that. It's been 30 years since there's been a very serious discussion between the major leagues and minor leagues. And when that happens, when that much time passes and you don't have any discussions, well, it's not that we didn't have any discussions. They were basically, you know, it ain't broken, so keep it going the way it is. There's been a change of commissioner. So there's different ways of looking at it from the Major League Baseball, and you know, it's a challenge, and we're gonna work as hard as we can so that, as I mentioned, 16 teams in the Midwest League, that we continue to have 16 teams in the Midwest League.
Hey Dick, your son Matt's a double domer. He played for Paul Menieri, got his law degree at Notre Dame as well, and he works. Is it deputy general counsel? Is that his title for the Players Association?
You know what? I don't know what his title is. He's way up there, and as a parent, you always want to see your kids do better. So he's in the majors, and I'm in the minors. So that's worked out really well. Matt is in the middle of all this in terms of
that was kind of my curiosity.
He lives in Connecticut and took the, you know, their offices are in Manhattan. So he went to the home, work out of home pretty quickly. When you get on a train and you travel about an hour and you're jammed in and you go into a city the size of New York, Midtown Manhattan, you would come right into Grand Central Station. So that was not a good recipe under the current conditions. So he's been working at his house. He's been on the phone constantly trying to sort out, you know, the things that have to be sorted out in terms of, do the players get paid during this time? Where do they work out? When there's been talk about starting the season in Arizona, you know, there's all these different contingencies and it's a pretty complicated mix. $1 billion business, you know, a lot at stake. And so Matt's been a pretty busy camper this past month.
I have one more Midwest League related question, Dick, and that just centers around umpires, because Major League Baseball sure sounds like at some point the robot strike zone is coming. Do you think we'll ever see that in the Midwest League?
Well, not in the near future. I'm an old timer, so I'm not quite sure that's the way to go with that. And I know that you have some frustrations, as I do, from time to time with our umpiring. But last year was really a pretty good year for us. And there's a lot of metrics to measure that by. One metric is how much money in fines I levy. They were way down. And we had some pretty good umpires, and the program is getting better and better and better.
Yeah,
the minor leagues control the umpires. In other words, they are our employees. We have an umpiring academy. There's a umpire development office, which I almost every day of the season I talk with Dusty Dellinger, who runs that, and we go over any ejections or issues that had occurred the night before. You know, we review the MILB TV feed from Darren when he's complaining about some of the calls that are made. And I just want the strike zone called.
That's it, Dick. Just call the strike zone. It can't be 2x2, you know?
No, you know what? You know what else you want? You know what else you want? You deserve it is consistency. And yeah, so that's what we try to do. I mean, and I will tell you that these umpires, I call them kids. They're not kids. Young men and women.
Tough job.
It's a tough job. There's only two of them in our league, anyway. And they work hard. They have film study. They really, really work hard. Now, just like you see the ball go through the legs of the shortstop, and then you know who's a $10 million bonus player. There's some that we blow. You know, we just do, and we try to learn from it. And I still think. bringing that human element, keeping that human element in the game is important.
I've got one more question, Sean. I don't know if you have anything else, but let me wrap up my side of it with this, Nick. I asked you this, I think, maybe it was during the All-Star game or late in the year, if you'd had a chance to meet with new Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett. Well, the Irish had a heck of a spring before everything got stopped. So I was wondering, as a former Irish player, just your impressions of what Link was able to do in a short amount of time with this team.
Well, here's my what I said, and I met with Link. I really like him. He's got a great pedigree. He's a good baseball guy, and I followed them every game they played this year. I think they're the. And in fact, I told him that we're printing the T-shirts, 2020 ACC champs, 3-0 undefeated. you know, to start the season. I mean, first of all, they were, you know, they didn't play a real challenging Southern, you know, tour preseason, but they won the games.
Yeah.
And then they go in and they sweep North Carolina and did it convincingly. Okay. This was not like eking it out. I mean, they had some slugfest, they had good pitching. And then they were supposed to play Louisville, I think, the next series. So that would have been a little bit of a tester at that point. But look, he's brought them a long way. It's a crying shame that they weren't able to continue with the season, because I think we would have seen some really remarkable results. And I'm really optimistic and bullish on Link.
Well, and I'll just say, you know, kind of piggybacking on what you're saying, Dick, is we've both seen enough Notre Dame baseball to know that you can't take those early season games for granted, regardless of what your level of competition is. We've seen plenty go the other way.
Well, you know, look, baseball is probably, and I get into arguments with some of the other coaches at Notre Dame, some of the other sports, it's probably the most unfair sport because of the fact that weather is so dominant you know, you've got Paul Mainieri down there at LSU, you know, who's playing 45 home games out of 56 or whatever it is. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But I'm not taking any away from Paul. Paul Mainieri is the greatest college coach I've ever seen. I say that as a former baseball player and as a parent of a player. And I treasure the time I had with him and also still communicate with him. But it's tough. It's tough on the Northern schools to go down and get their brains beat out early in the season. And then now with us being in the ACC, we're starting in March, and you got to be ready. If you ain't ready, it isn't gonna look good at the end of the year.
Well, Dick, I'll say this, talking to Mike Collins and Tim Connor, the other Pirate fans that I know very, very well, I'm wondering, is this virus kind of setting us up, allowing the Pirates to rebuild a little bit, and they're going to come out of nowhere and surprise everybody?
Well, let me tell you, okay, so I was in Florida earlier in March. I probably saw one of the last minor league games. I saw the Tampa Bay Rays play the Pittsburgh Pirates. I couldn't tell you three guys on the Pirates. They were all new guys. The game ended in a tie. and so in the spring training games now, they don't do extra innings. So it ended up 2-2 tie. And then they called the season off. So I think I got the last game in. The Pirates got a long way to go, Darren.
I know. Yeah,
they got a long way to go.
And how about the Dodgers' Justin Turner? He came up with the idea of extra inning games to go to a home run derby, which, of course, was a huge hit, the Midwest League All-Star Game in South Bend last summer.
Wasn't that great? Oh. And that was, you know, awesome. the Texas League had done that before us. I don't know whether they actually did it or not, but they had the rule. And we you know, and I think I told you the story the year before in Dayton, we were tied and went into the extra inning rule in the 10th, and we had talked to the managers, and I was going to get booed by Lansing. I was going to get booed by 10,000 people because we were going to call the game off. And it was the Dayton player who hit a single, knocked in the run, and won 3-2, so I didn't have to do that. And we said, and I said, that's never going to happen again. I'm never going to put myself in that position. So we talked about various options, and the one we came up with was the one we used, and it worked out. And I thought it was fabulous, wasn't it? Wasn't that a great?
It was.
Great
it was
game,
perfect.
Great weekend. Yeah.
Yep.
Great.
It was perfect.
3 days or whatever. Yeah.
But on the other hand, you and Bud Selig could have something in common: getting booed at the All-Star game.
Yeah. I dodged the bullet, man. Let me tell you.
Well, Dick, thanks so much for joining us and letting us have an extended conversation with you. And it's really good to find out some of the background things you're dealing with right now. And thanks for sharing some insight on this retraction that's being talked about. I was really kind of wanting to get your insight on all that, and it was a wonderful answer. Yeah. So thank you for what you do for baseball in our area, and looking forward to seeing you at Four Winds Field hopefully very, very soon.
I hope so, too, Darren. And most of all, everybody in this area, all your listeners, and please be safe. Listen to what they're telling us, and I think we'll get out of this sooner rather than later if we do that. So God bless everybody, and especially our first responders and the grocery store workers, the people in the hospitals. There's a lot of people out there that are putting their lives on the line for us. And I just want to thank them for that.
You bet. Well said, Dick, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
South Bend resident and the president of the Midwest League, Dick Nussbaum. Boy, some great insight there on what he's dealing with right now with the pandemic and hopefully getting baseball back going again soon. And before all this happened, there was the retraction conversation, so a lot going on right now in the game of baseball. But, Sean, as you know, the Midwest League is as strong as any league, and they get more attendance than any league not in AAA.
Really?
They're better than all the AA teams, all the Carolina, the Carolina League group. The Midwest League has the most attendance outside of the AAA league. So that says something right there. It's a very, very strong league, and proudly South Bend has just fell in love with the Cubs being here, and the attendance now, 300,000 is kind of the norm. 350, that's what we expect. And
pretty darn good.
Yeah, this year's going to be a little different. We'll see how things play out, how quickly we can get on the field. But the Midwest League is very, very healthy. And I agree with Dick. There's a couple of teams. They're going to have to do something with their stadiums. But majority of the stadiums, great places to go for the fans and a great place to play for these professional players. All right. Let's step aside for a second. We'll regroup. We'll come back with Rapid Fire as Sports Beat rolls on for this Thursday evening. It is 636 at 96.1 WSBT live on the Sports Beat app.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
Darren, we're going to start with a piece of Brian Kelly audio that we didn't get to use yesterday. Yeah, that's right. You and me both. But Eric Hansen started out the Zoom teleconference or video conference yesterday by asking, with the first session of summer classes being moved online, can we safely assume that there wouldn't be any on-campus player workouts until there are actually classes on campus? And here is Brian Kelly's answer to that.
No, we're going to have a meeting on May 15th to, kind of further look at what the next step is. Certainly, there are not going to be classes in the first summer session. Provost Burrish has made that clear in a memo to the entire community. But on May 15th, we will look at, again, in another 5 weeks, whether there will be any changes relative to in-person on campus, and that includes, whether we get into any sports-related activities. So that decision will not be made until May 15th.
So May 15th, a big date. Darren, your thoughts on what you heard there from Brian Kelly?
Well, I guess a lot can happen between now and then. We might be in a different place, let's hope so, by the time that meeting takes place. Outside of safety, that's a given in this situation. I'm just hopeful that throughout college football we can have a standard when everybody is going to start. because one school may have classes in person in the summer, another school may not. The school that's having classes, well, maybe you can start coming together as a team and doing different things, although, you know, you can't practice, obviously. While another school that still has teaching online during that time, you can't come to campus to be together. So I just worry about that. Is it going to be easy to have everybody on the same timeline? Again, you're going to have meetings. I mean, whether there's watchdogs or not, I'm a football coach, yeah, I'm still going to get the guys together and have little conversations and meetings, and you can have video sessions. I mean, you're not going to get caught. Let's face it, you're trying to get ready for a season the best you can, but if you are at a school that you're not having classes, what does that mean? So I guess that's my concern. Will there be a competitive advantage at all for some teams or some conferences by the way things are done?
That's a very good point.
I don't
because,
know.
No, I mean, it's a very good point because as we talked about yesterday, down at Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy would have his guys back on campus and going at it in about 3 weeks if he had his way. And then Oklahoma State, the university itself, had to come out and say, look, safety first, and we're not pushing that timeline regardless of what the football coach wants. But that's I think it's a case where the NCAA is going to have to step forward and say, look, if everyone can't get started, then no one can get started, because then it does become a big competitive disadvantage situation, depending on where you happen to be and what the safety standards are in the area that a school happens to be in. Because, I mean, you could, and this is just theoretically, Notre Dame could be ready to go in northern Indiana, but down in southern Indiana, the IU, the Hoosiers, might not be ready to go, just depending on what's going on down there. So, you know, this goes back to, we talked about this in the first hour, the way things were handled during the conference basketball tournaments. It was left to the conferences to make their own decisions on when they were shutting down. And we saw the Big East start up a game, and they had to stop at halftime after the other conferences, including the ACC, had shut it down. The NCAA kind of lagged behind everybody, but in this case, I do think they need to be more out front and have a standard start time for everybody, you know, once things do get going. I don't think that it should be regionalized, but at the same time, as I said in the first hour, college football is the cash cow for all these universities, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it is handled once we get closer to the start of the season. If there are pockets around the country that can start and others that can't, will conferences just say, look, our schools are going to play, we're going to play each other regardless of what other conferences happen to be doing? It's I think there needs to be a major sort of meeting of the minds and a unitarian kind of approach to this whole thing.
Well, I think we all have at least minor issues, if not major issues at time, with the NCAA, the way they do things. The transfer situation, where it seems like cases are very similar. One kid gets to play right away, the other doesn't. The transfer portal, there's just a lot of things that are concerning that the NCAA does. How slow the process is when a school is under investigation. And just the way they handled the Notre Dame situation a few years ago was just dismal. And then Notre Dame has to give back victories because of what I thought was a horrible decision by the NCAA. With all that being said, I found it shocking recently when President Trump had a teleconference or a video conference with commissioners across all sports, from Major League Baseball to Vince McMahon of the WWF. I mean, there's a wide-ranging group, but there was no representative of the NCAA in that conference, and that, to me, just kind of blows my mind. Now, maybe they were not invited.
What are you doing? Yeah,
I have a hard time believing they would not be invited, but there was no representation. At times, the NCAA just feels like they're on their own planet, on their own timeline, and nothing else really matters to them, what anybody else thinks.
Right. Yep. I agree. And I mean, you're right. Maybe they weren't invited because it was professional sports that, you know, all the commissioners of all the professional sports that were in there. But if Vince McMahon is in there as well, if I was the NCAA and I found out that this was going on and I hadn't been invited to participate, I sure would have been on the phone to somebody and say, hey, can we at least sort of listen in and hear what's going on in this whole thing? It just seems like it makes sense because, as we all know, there's billions of dollars on the line when it comes to the NCAA as well, whether or not it's a quote-unquote professional sport.
And it takes the FBI to start an investigation on basketball recruiting.
Get me started.
What? What's going on? What?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Exactly.
Come on.
Yep. All right, Pittsburgh Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert wants to add three rounds to the NFL draft due to the, quote, inherent challenges posed by the coronavirus restrictions, end quote. Do you buy or sell that, Darren Pritchett?
Love all the whining. Keep it coming, you know. Such a disadvantage when you have all the perks. You still can't get first-round picks right. Back in the old days, they didn't have all these perks. But at the same time, I'm totally fine with that. There is a little more guessing involved in this compared to other years. So to cover their bases, maybe you take some chances on some guys that are injured that you've not had a chance to have your doctors get their hands on them. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Add a few more rounds. I'm fine with that. More TV for us.
You know, a few days ago, I probably would have been okay with this. But then when you mentioned what NFL executives were doing in the 1970s and prior to that, going out and buying magazines to do their research for draft picks. And just the fact that the NFL draft was 17 rounds back in the 70s. I mean, it was almost three times as long back then as it is now. And what didn't they have in the 70s? They didn't have the internet. They didn't have social media, email, cell phones, text messages, all this stuff. The way we're able to communicate now is 1,000 times better than it was 40 years ago. So you can't tell me that. I mean, you and I, just in the last couple of weeks, as an example, we've talked about these kids who are either thinking about playing for Notre Dame, just recruiting guys. When we look at these guys, all you got to do is go to Google and you search for these high school kids and there's video on them. So you can't tell me that if you can find video of a high school kid, then an NFL general manager can't go find video on a Division I football player that he's thinking about drafting. So I think it's just a panic kind of thing on this particular general manager. I know there are others who want it as well. I mean, it's seven rounds. Go with seven rounds, and then when it's over, you can sign whoever you want as an undrafted free agent. I don't think there's any reason that they need to extend this any longer than seven rounds that it already is.
Again, more TV for us.
Well, that's true, too. It's a fair point, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if we want to look at it from that aspect, that's a fair point, too. All right, we'll wrap it up with that tonight.
All right, very good. That is Rapid Fire for today. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat rolls on in just a moment from 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. It is 7 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat from home. Sean Steyers and Darren Pritchett with you. Our baseball theme today continues on the day that would have been opening day for minor league baseball. CBSSports.com did a fun ranking of the top 10 rebuilding teams in Major League Baseball. Three of those are found in the AL Central. Number 9 is the Detroit Tigers. And they've got some really good young pitching coming in Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Tarek Skubal. They're getting a lot of attention right now. The problem is, at the upper levels of the organization, there's not a lot of offense coming. They took a young kid in Riley Green that could have some potential, but he's several years away. Former South Bend Cub Isaac Paredes is a guy that there could be some hope, but I just don't see a lot of offensive boost coming to Detroit in the near future, but you can never have enough pitching, and pitching is expensive, as we know. Some folks on the north side of Chicago can tell you that. And when you can develop your own pitching, boy, life gets a whole lot easier. So that looks like that's how the Tigers start to get competitive through their starting rotation in the next year or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was kind of surprised to see this list. Seeing the Tigers at number nine means that they're one of the ninth best rebuilding organizations, essentially. Is that what this is saying?
Well, and I think you also have to look at it, how many teams are actually rebuilding.
Ah, that's true, too.
So is number nine really good? Because that's why I brought up the offense. There's not a lot coming in the upper levels of the system. I mean, West Michigan wins titles in the Midwest League because they get a lot of 23-year-old players that are drafted by the Tigers. And those guys don't develop into major leaguers. They may hit 300 in the Midwest League because they're older than the guys they're facing, but that's not going to make you a winner at the major league level. Your Royals came in at number eight, and it looks like pitching is going to be the dominant force to maybe get Kansas City back to a competitive standpoint.
Yeah, they need it. Yes, if that's what you're saying. And I saw in this little paragraph here that Dayton Moore could trade Whit Merrifield. And I would think if they do trade him, which would make sense, even though they just signed him to a contract extension, they would want some nice pitching prospects back in return.
Without a doubt. Well, Bobby Witt Jr. is a young teenager. They drafted high last year, a middle infielder that could help them down the road. And no surprise, the White Sox were number two, only the Padres ahead of them. And a lot of that talent has arrived at the major league level. Tim Anderson, Moncada, Eloy Jimenez. You've got Luis Robert ready to make his debut. They got that second baseman out of Oregon State ready to come up very soon, Michael Kopech. Nick Madrigal's the kid from Oregon State I was trying to think of. Andrew Vaughn, they drafted him number three overall as a first baseman. So a lot of interesting guys coming right now on the south side, and the Padres have a ridiculous amount of prospects. So there's no shame in being number two on this list, trust me. Fort Wayne, the number of young players they've had coming through with talent has been just really off the chart. The problem is they can't really win in the Midwest League because the guys are so young, and usually they take off right after they leave Fort Wayne, although Fernando Tatis was the one guy that you knew was going to be pretty doggone good when he played for Fort Wayne.
Yep.
He's going to be a stud. All right, you can check out the full list at cbssports.com at 6:56 at WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, stay fun. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org and by Rossini's Pizza. Carry out, you're proud to bring home. Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. For Sean and Jerry, I'm Darren. Have a great evening. 7 o'clock, WSBT South Bend.